This is the RP Report. Big things come in little packages. This time-worn statement can be readily applied to state-of-the-art ham gear today, whether it be HF, VHF, or UHF. But in this particular instance, the big thing is intermod. The mixing of two signals, each on its own frequency, resulting in a third signal on yet another frequency. That frequency may be the input or output of a repeater. And if you carry this scenario out further, the results can be catastrophic on many levels. So what do we do about this monster called intermod? And with manufacturers designing ever smaller transceivers, will this RF monster grow stronger and become more insidious? Howard Elephant's Canine SYA, a Skokie, Illinois resident, is regional rep for Tektronix Incorporated, a company known for its high-quality spectrum analyzers. This is part two of an interview with Howard about the murky world of intermod. What are some other solutions that won't cost so much money if a repeater roof is on a shoestring budget?
Well, it depends what you're sharing the site with. For example, if you have a system on maybe 800 megahertz, you could put a cavity in, and certainly cavity-tuned, some of the better cavities for 2 meters would reject that 800 meg signal substantially. But the only way to ensure that all the power is directed into a load and not into your transmitter is with a circulator.
What can the average ham do for his own radio?
For his own radio, at his home, typically you don't have to worry about it because you're not sharing your home with other transmitters.
There's more and more packet digipeaters going up now on some pretty high buildings. Those aren't repeaters. But would circulators solve mixed problems with those as well, or is this more of a problem for repeaters?
No, it depends on where the digi-repeater is located, and it can be susceptible to the same sort of products as a normal repeater. And what I mean by that is it runs a transmitter. The transmitter can receive energy from an antenna. If it's the only antenna on the building, the probabilities of it having this problem is remote. We talked about home stations. Typically, you wouldn't have to worry about the transmitter. It's the receiver that usually is going to be susceptible to the third order problems and other problems.
Okay, then is there anything you can do to lessen that problem?
Yes. If it's truly occurring within your receiver, which is usually the case, if the products are caused by two signals, maybe their commercial band, that's far enough out of the amateur spectrum that you can put a cavity in your line that would reject that out-of-band signal. Anything you can do to lower the third-order intermod signal sources that get into the mixer of your receiver will eliminate that problem, assuming it's occurring in the receiver.
But now let's be very clear here. That cavity normally is only tuned for one frequency. So if you are a repeater hopper, you're going to have problems, aren't you?
Normally the lower Q cavities are about 2 megahertz wide.
So it would work for the lower portion or the upper portion of 2 meters or 220. But what about 440, where you have a 10 meg band with for typical FM operation?
Well, then you would have a problem. But maybe the third order that you're trying to get rid of or the signals that you're trying to reduce is only bothering you on one frequency. So you can leave the cavity in only when you're on that frequency.
What kind of steps can one take to determine what this frequency is?
What needs to be done is you have to determine whether it's your receiver that the problem is being generated in or whether it's really being generated in the air from other source. When you reduce a signal coming into your radio with an attenuator, the signal should vary as the attenuator is varied. And what I mean by that, if you put in a 5 dB attenuator, the signal should vary 5 dB. If, on the other hand, as you vary the signal coming into the radio and you've tried to vary it 5 dB with an external attenuator and the incoming signal varies maybe 20 dB, it's nonlinear, and that's usually indicative of third order coming from outside the radio.
Are there any other techniques that the typical ham can do to protect his or her VHF, UHF radio from being part of the problem and not part of the solution?
The problem is in the design of the radios when it's occurring in the receiver. They just do not have what's known as maximum dynamic range. You have strong signals and weak signals, and that is a problem with low bands where you have neighbors operating in the same band you are. That's dynamic range, and you can run into problem. In 2 meters, you have the same thing where you have strong repeater signals, and you're trying to listen to other areas, and the inner mod or other spurious can get to you generated within your radio.
So if you're looking at your third order intercept figures and your dynamic range figures on VHF and HF radios, what do you want to look for? Obviously, the higher the better. But is it pretty well standard no matter whether you buy an ICOM, Kenwood, Yaesu, Tentec, or what have you?
Well, the low-band radios are varying quite a bit. But on the 2-meter and 450 and above, they're pretty standard. They're in the 60 dB range. The old Motracs were 80 dB, and then the Micors were 90. But those are very expensive radios.
If Motorola provides 90 dB down for third-order intercept, and our typical ham rigs are 60 dB down, how much would it cost for the manufacturers to give us that additional selectivity?
I can't answer that. I'm not a design engineer of two-way radios. I can say that Motorola takes a lot of care, because they're in a competitive marketplace, to come out with the best radio they can. And that's why their radios are fairly expensive for the amateur market. It would cost more to do what you just said. And the other advantage in the Motorola system is it's a much larger case housing, and they have room to do things that aren't done anymore. In the older days, the ham gear was large physically. Now it's small. And they used to have fairly large cavities in the front end. Well, not many radios have large cavities anymore, if at all. So the radios are getting smaller by user demand, but they're also allowing larger signals in that shouldn't occur.
And is this even more of a problem now that we have rigs that scan out of band?
Yes. Part of the ability to scan out of band means that you don't have the tuned front end. You may, but particularly the small talkies, they tune the front end with varactors, but there's not that much rejection to out-of-band signals. That's why the talkies are so prone to these intermod products that you hear.
You're listening to part two of an interview with Howard Elevitz, K9SYA, regional rep for Tektronix Incorporated, delving into the murky world of intermod. We'll conclude this interview after a 10-second pause for station ID. This is RAIN, the Radio Amateur Information Network.
You're listening to the RAIN Report from www.therainreport.com.
So it's really a double-edged sword that we want talkies, and mobile rigs for that matter, but especially talkies that will cover, let's say, 130 to 180 megs for VHF and 430 to 470 in UHF, but we're going to pay for it, aren't we?
You're paying for it in intermod, a lack of rejection. The radios are so small, it's hard to put in a big circuit to handle that.
On the little dual band HTs, like the real small ones, literally fit with your hand closed inside. How on earth can you get any kind of selectivity in those radios?
Well, see, the point is they're not designing it for that. The ham market wants the smallest radio that they can get. Designers are assuming these people aren't going to put them on antennas for outdoor use. It's designed as a portable system, and if you're designing with that in mind versus a multiplicity of use, which people are using them for today, then it's a totally different criteria in the design.
Are the radios at crossband any more or any less prone to intermod and mixes?
I wouldn't say that they are, no.
So really the ultimate solution, besides having circulators and cavities on repeaters and your own rig respectively, really we need to re-educate the whole concept of operation on VHF, UHF, and the low bands too, for that matter, for the average ham.
Well, it would be desirable to have some good questions in the question pool for at least the general and above that talk about the topic, so that if only from the standpoint of eliminating animosity that can develop when these products occur. There was an incident in Chicago where two repeaters shared the same site. Originally, they had two different antennas, And this problem that I was discussing a few minutes ago was quite prevalent, where the third order products happen to be on the output of two different repeaters rather than the input. So the members got upset. Well, the clubs got together and bought a combining system. And the combining system lowered the third order from what it was to over 90 dB. But then people called up and said, we still hear it. What they didn't understand is that the problem was within their receiver at that point, or if they got very close to the transmitter site, they would be exceeding the capability of the rejection of the receiver, so they would hear it anyhow, and that's quite normal. So I guess what I'd like to ask is, before you assume that it's the repeater's fault, you need to make sure where the source is. And most of the time, it'll probably be your receiver. It's ignorance. It's not by intent. It's just people get frustrated, and they would like a clear channel, and they hear these other repeaters, and they don't understand really what's happening. It can create repeater wars, although it didn't in this case, but it can create animosities. There's no question about it.
For someone who really wants to learn more about this but is not real technically inclined, because they all know where to look, where do you recommend?
Some of the basic electronics textbooks go into it. DeVry has some in Chicago and around the country. There's primers that companies like Tektronix and HP have called Spectrum Analyzer Fundamentals. And they go into intermod, and the same type of intermod that can occur in a spectrum analyzer, because it is a receiver, would be valid for any receiver, and that would give you a pretty good explanation.
Do those assume that you're starting at a fairly technical level?
No, they're basic. That's why it's called fundamentals.
Can you buy those books anywhere?
They're free. And there's a 800 number. I think it's 1-800-TEK-SPEK. Tech spec, and they can give you the app note. That's the fundamental of spectrum analyzers. It's a group of Tektronix and HP offer a large variety of application notes. You ask about one application, and that's what I mean by app note.
This has been the RP Report, Volume 4, Number 28, The Murky World of Intermod, Part 2 of an interview with Howard Elevitz, K9SYA, a Skokie, Illinois resident and regional rep for Tektronix Incorporated, a company known for its high-quality spectrum analyzers. Editorial note, I too echo Howard's request that next time you find an unfamiliar or intrusive signal on your favorite frequency, don't automatically assume it's someone else's fault. Try to determine if the signal is really on your frequency. Is it harmonic, or is it mixing with some other signal in your own receiver? Whatever the case and whatever the cause, I suggest you either telephone Tektronix Incorporated, as Howard suggested, at 800-TEK-SPEC, that's 800-TEXPEC, and request their publication entitled Fundamentals of Spectrum Analyzers, publication number 26W-7037-1, that's the Fundamentals of Spectrum Analyzers, publication number 26W-7037-1, toll-free number again for Tektronix, 800-TEK-SPEC, or better yet, stop by your favorite bookstore and pick up a pamphlet entitled Intermod Control. That's Intermod Control. The author is William F. Leiske. I believe it's spelled L-I-E-S-K-E. William F. Leiske. Now, if you can't find it in the bookstore, the Library of Congress catalog number is 84-50891. Again, the Library of Congress catalog card number is 84-50891. I'm Hap Holly, KC9RP, for the RP Report, a production of RAIN, the Radio Amateur Information Network.